This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Neil Martin, wine writer and blogger. How are you, Neil?
I'm fine, thank you, apart from the word blogger.
Yeah, you're not a big fan of blogging?
No, I just choose not to use that word because I find it a bit doesn't sum up what I do.
Okay. You're now writing for E. Robert Parker.
Yes, that's right.
And you started doing that about a year ago or just after?
Just under a year ago, yeah.
Yep. So what we're going to do in this is just cover, because you're one of the few bloggers,
yeah.
or wine writers on the web anyway,
yeah.
who've come through and are now sort of in full-time paid work, which is a wee bit unusual for a wine writer on the web. So what I really want to do is just get an idea of your history, how that's come through. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
I had a wee look at your notes a wee while ago, and I noticed you went to Warwick University.
Yep, that's right.
Is that where you got into wine, or?
No, not at all. I was just, I think the only wine I drank then was Ruby Port.
Ruby Port.
Yeah, occasionally.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
If it was cheap enough.
Yeah, yeah, but I wasn't into wine at all.
Okay. So when did you first get into wine?
That was when I started working for a Japanese subsidiary. I was an administrator for importing wine.
In Japan?
Yeah, all the wine I sold was to Japan.
Okay, you're based in the UK.
I was based in London, yeah.
Okay. And what sort of wines were they purchasing?
All the top stuff, all the first growths, DRCs, Petrus, big quantities.
Did you get to try it, or?
Not in the beginning, but when I started buying a lot of wine, then suddenly the nice bottles started being offered at lunch and dinner and so on. So I took advantage of that.
How did you get the job? Was it because if you didn't have much interest in wine beforehand?
Yeah, that's quite a sort of. I've mentioned this before. I didn't know anything about wine, so I knew I was going to have this interview. So I went to the off license the night before the interview, memorized one of the bottles, which just happened to be a Liebfraumilch, so that the next morning when they asked me what wine I liked, then I just repeated the name. And fortunately, the person interviewing me also didn't know about wine. So gave me the job, and
excellent.
And that was that. So.
That's quite a jump, isn't it, from Petrus to Liebe?
yeah, I didn't. Well, they would have been the same to me then. So.
Okay, so you're doing this job, and
yeah.
And you got to try a few of the wines.
Yeah.
Did any of the wines really stand out, or what was your moment of epiphany?
Well, my epiphany was Monroe's 82. That was the wine where I realised that it was more than just a beverage, or it had something intellectual about it. Not that I understood it then, but I could just see that there was something here that really interested me. So that was the wine that did it for me.
Once you realised wine was a big thing for you,
mm.
What was your process? You know, obviously you've got to get some background information. How did you get your basic?
After that, I just started tasting more and more. I used to go to a lot of tastings and just reading. I was working on my own. There was nobody else who did wine in my office, so I just had to learn from, people like Jarcis Robinson or Robert Parker, and just see what they said about the wines I was drinking and buying. So and then I did a WSET certificate, Battersea College. You know, just I always remember lesson one was, you know, what is wine? That was the first question, and then we all just stood there. What is it? I don't, you know. And just went from there, and I just did that intermediate certificate, diploma, which I passed in 01, just about.
Just about now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then since then, when did you first start writing about wines?
The first article I wrote was for Tom Canavan's website. That was on the DRC tasting, and actually from that article I met my wife.
DRC?
Domaine de la Romanée Conti. And so that was the first article I wrote in 2002, and then I started Wine Journal a year later, June 2003.
And the Wine Journal was effectively like a blog, really. What was the objective of it?
Well, it wasn't a blog. No, it was basically... It started as just over the years I'd collated all these about 7,000 tasting notes with some, you know, pretty good wines, and I was just bored in the office one day and just went down to Waterstones and learnt how to write my name using computer coding, and to my surprise found I could do it, and then copy and pasted a tasting note instead of my name. And then 2 or 3 hours later, that was kind of really the basis of Wine Journal, because that's how much my knowledge kind of finished there. Yeah. With computers, so I couldn't go much further, but it didn't need to. All I needed was I wanted an information based site.
Yeah.
And then I put a lot of effort into the writing of it and the creativity and the creative side of it. So that's why I dislike the word blog, because blogs more to me is more like just a diary.
Yeah.
Whereas mine was like a diary, but then I would try and make it funny or maybe a little bit poetic, or, you know, just to make it something that would be entertaining for people to read.
When was that? That was about...
June 2003. And it, you know, in the beginning it was literally like one visit a day, and that would either be me or my mum. And then it suddenly took off when I wrote a kind of account of La Fête de la Fleur at Mouton Rothschild after Vinexpo. And it was kind of quite... I tried to make it quite funny. And
what was that? Was that a tasting or...?
It was like a huge, big banquet with... I remember Placido Domingo was there, and I think Catherine Deneuve was there. But I was just... They were pouring Mouton 82 as much as you could drink, so I was kind of more concentrating on that, really. But I just... I kind of just write something that was a little bit kind of, you know, funny and... and entertaining for people, and it caught people's attention, and people seemed to like reading it. So I thought, well, you know, okay, if that's what people want to read, I'll write it.
And that's when you found your voice, is that?
Yeah, I think the internet is a perfect medium for, if I wrote in print, I'm restricted by what the editor might ask me to write about or the amount of column inches. Whereas on the internet, you know, I could choose to write 100 words, 1,000 words. I could put as many pictures as I want with it. I could go on complete tangents if I wanted. There's no limitation to what you can do. And so really I just wanted to exploit that.
So your website was up and running around June 2003.
Yeah.
It was obviously pretty amateurish at that point.
Yeah, it was amateurish for about the first, I don't know, 18 months. And then I think the real turning point was when a good friend of mine, Joel, redesigned it for me, but in a sort of personal way that reflected me. I didn't want it to be like corporate looking. I wanted to keep the kind of the slight sort of anarchy of it, or the surrealism or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a, you know, fantastic redesign, and after that it had like an image and a kind of brand, and it, you know, you could
style.
See a style, yeah, that, and it, you know, it was very distinctive looking, so people could instantly recognize it. And that's when people started coming up to me at tastings and saying, oh, are you the guy that does Wine Journal? Because, you know,
yep,
they recognized my ugly face.
Yeah. Okay, so that was about November. Got it rewritten. How many? It's no longer available, is it? Or not under your old?
No, I mean, it got, by the end, it was getting, it had 145,000 unique URLs, people, and they were downloading about just under 500,000 pages a month.
Nice.
So it was one of the biggest sites on the net, and then I took it down. Much to everyone's
horror,
yeah. I got a few emails like, you know, you've sold your soul, and how could you do that? And it's kind of a strange thing. People kind of always expect you to do it for free, and it's like, well, it took me, you know, I was spending like 8 or 9 hours on it a day plus, you know, to make it. So,
yep.
You know, I've got a family to support. So,
Definitely. So when did Robert? Because you're writing now for Robert Parker,
yeah,
in erobertparker,
yeah,
.com,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, erobert.com.
How did you tie in with him?
Basically, I had a feeling he knew about my site, apart from the exposure it had, because I used to do the music's a big part of the site, and one year I asked well-known people to ask what's their favourite songs of the year. So I had replies from Jarcis Robinson, Andrew Jefford, quite a few winemakers. And I thought, I wonder if I can get Robert Parker. And I'd had an email from somebody who was his friend. So I emailed him and said, do you think you could ask him for his favourite songs of the year? And then 3 or 4 days later, through him, I got these you know, his favourite songs of the year. So I knew, he must be aware of it. But, actually, I think he's very savvy when it comes to the internet. He knows a lot of, not just the big websites, but, you know, he knows what's going on there. He surfs when he can. So he knew about me and then just approached me and asked if I would, write for him and put the kind of two websites together.
So that was really changing from an amateur, because you weren't generating any revenue at that point, were you?
No, I was.
Oh, you were?
I was, yes.
How were you making money then?
I did it through a little bit of banner advertising and a nice affiliate deal. And I was running the whole website for £11.49 a month, so I didn't make to make. I didn't need to make much money.
Were you living off it, or?
I could have lived off it if I was, say, in my early 20s without a family.
Yeah.
I couldn't really live off it with kids.
Yeah.
But maybe in the end I could have done. I mean, I would have done subscription for it, or for part of it in the end, you know, because it had to go somewhere.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because I wasn't doing it full time. It was still like a part time thing. So if you want to do it full time, then that's a different, you know, different kettle of fish.
So you're on board with Robert now?
Yeah.
Full time?
Yes.
So you're a full-time wine journalist. You've made that sort of enthusiastic amateur right through to a full-time journalist?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of considered myself full-time even with when I was doing Wine Journal, I think, because I was spending so many hours on it. And the output was, I mean, I wrote over 2,000 pages in 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's the equivalent of like 2 or 3 books.
Yep.
So that's pretty dedicated. So I sort of, technically I wasn't full-time, but I think of it as being full-time.
Your style is quite, it's interesting. On the one hand, I was reading a few articles in preparation for this, and I had to have a thesaurus beside me all the time just to work out what you were saying sometimes. You use quite big words, or not so much big words, but unusual words.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I think you have to have a distinctive style, and I kind of like to write. I wanted to, in a way, I focus more on fine wine. It gets a bit egotistical and occupies this kind of rarefied atmosphere, and I kind of wanted to kind of prick the ego a little bit and say, well, it's just wine, you know. So the way I write would be kind of about mundane things in life, or, you know, the sort of stupidity of life, and infuse that into the article, so that on the one hand you've got, okay, I'm drinking a dozen vintages of Petrus, but on the other I would say, yeah, and then I drank the 89 with my ham sandwiches afterwards. And I think that's a nice juxtaposition. And the same with the language, you know, you'd have like maybe a slightly poetic sentence or with a long word, and then go straight to something quite stupid and inane afterwards. And I just think that gives it a sort of contrast in the in the prose.
Do you read a lot of other people's writings?
No, not really. I don't really have much time. I try and read Giants' column in the FT. But I read mostly on the net. I think on the internet has the most interesting items I want to read nowadays. I don't really want to read about, you know, I focus, I know the areas I want to specialise in. So I prefer reading things on the net.
You can get a load of different opinions.
Yeah,
on something.
But I don't read newspaper columns, or
yeah,
I find them boring.
Okay. Sorry. So are all those people who write newspapers.
But it's, you know, well, apart from, there's a couple of exceptions. You know, I love reading like Andrew Jefford and Jancis, you know, but the others don't really. I just find them a bit boring to read.
You like Jancis. You've talked a lot about Bordeaux. What wines are you interested in?
I mean, I've focused mainly on fine wines because I'm not... how should I say this? I think that Hugh Johnson said, you know, wine's worth talking about. And so, personally, I don't see the point in me tasting, you know, 100 supermarket wines. I don't want to talk about them. I like drinking them. So I'm not saying I don't go to supermarkets and drink those wines, but I won't sit at my computer writing reams about them. But if it's a kind of a wine where, you know, the producer has put some effort into making something special, then I think, you know, okay, that deserves some words written about it. So I focus on the kind of, it's not a value thing. I'm not saying I wouldn't write about a wine that's £5. I would do if it interests me.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to spend all my time doing it. I'm better known for writing about, you know, fine Bordeaux or Burgundy. And
do you write about New Zealand wines?
They're making wine these days. I do. I think I've got the trouble is that if you're going to write that much, I mean, if you're writing like I was writing about 10,000 words a week, and if you're writing that much, you just don't have the time to kind of write about New Zealand in the same detail. And I would like to do that. So if I had the time, then I would spend time writing New Zealand, but I'd do it in the same detail as I would do Bordeaux.
Yep.
And I just don't have the time to spread around.
That's your little girl in the background.
That's Lily. She's actually features a lot in the writing. So
she's in the podcast as well.
Yeah, she features in a lot of photos. And somebody was saying to me, "Oh, we need to like copyright the photos." And I said, "Well, you don't need to, because you can see Lily's head just in the corner if you look carefully." So, but yeah, that's part of the writing. I mean, I think people always say wine is part of life. Mm-hmm. So when I write, when I started writing Wine Journal, I was single. No, I wasn't single. I just started seeing a girl, and I was living in a small flat in South London. And then by the time I started with Bob, I'd got married and had a child, and everyone had read through that kind of. And you can, I suppose, hopefully, you know, people can relate to that. So so people kind of follow the story of Lily growing up and so on. So.
When you shifted over from your website onto the E. Robert Parker,
mm-hmm.
did you leave your old site up?
No, I think I gave notice. I gave 1 month notice. Bob declared it. He made a notice on his forum in the morning. And then, of course, I had to hand my notice in at work because it would go round the... And I was still working full time. So then I had to sort of hand in my notice with my job, which was obviously a big... I'd been there 10 years and... And then, so there was a month notice, and I had a few emails from people saying, you know, you've sold your soul and so on. And I took the website down a month later. Yeah. So there's still the page there. I kept the
homepage.
But I took all the content down, and now I have people saying, oh, can you send it to me on CD and so on. So,
Do you?
No,
because you've got to get a subscription to E. Robert Parker.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Have you put all your content back up on Robert's site?
It's going up. It's a long transition process because it's not just a. I mean, I changed my scoring system as well from 25 to out of 100, so I have to go through every single wine, proofread the note, look at the score, and kind of transpose that to out of 100. You know, it takes a long time.
On that note, we'll wrap it up there, and next week we'll be hopefully talking about your scoring system.
Sure.
All right. Thanks very much, Neil.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thank you.